Storm Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode number 88, recorded February the 6th, 2025, brought to you by Memberful. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me is the injury expert himself, Will Carroll from the Under the Knife newsletter. Will, welcome back to Downstream.
Hey, thanks for having me. Always enjoy it.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Super Bowl week, so more sports.
Yeah.
More sports this week.
It's the biggest ad weekend of all time.
It is. I mean, I'm always struck by how much of a crossover the Super Bowl is. Like, if you look at the championship game ratings and the Super Bowl ratings, it's funny because, like, I watch playoff games and all of that, but like, it's very clear that half of, I don't even know what the percentage is, but like a large portion of the Super Bowl audience in the United States is people who do not pay attention to football at all, but they're like, well, it's the Super Bowl, I'll watch the Super Bowl. I think that's kind of fascinating, and it's incredibly powerful. That's why all the ads and all the talk and all the hype happens, is because it is not just a big football game. I mean, football rules here in the US, but like, it's more than that. It's a national holiday, yeah. Basically.
It really should be. Actually, the day after should be. It'll be interesting to see, because there's so few things that we can all first agree on and kind of watch together. It used to be everybody watched the same shows because there were three networks. And, you know, if there was a divide, it was because you liked Huntley and Brinkley over Walter Cronkite. And that was just kind of a personal preference. Now, here we are talking about however many different streaming services there are and more skinny bundles coming and all those things. But hey, even with all the different things, and I'm sure we'll talk about it, that the Super Bowl is going to try to do, it's still freely available in to most places, if not all, especially with the Tubi thing. It's one of those few things that everybody watches, and I can't think of very many things like it.
Yeah, if you look at the ratings in the US, it feels like there's the Super Bowl, there's the Oscars, believe it or not, is still watched by a lot of people. I think the Grammys are often in that category, and they just had those because it's such a collection of musical performers. And then beyond that, like Olympic opening ceremonies, maybe. We saw this last year, you know, a presidential debate. That's about it. I mean, there it is not like it used to be, but there are still a few moments, and the Super Bowl is by far the pinnacle of those in terms of just still being a thing. Everybody, not everybody, but like more people get together and watch that than anything else.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that has a lot to do with the ratings, because, you know, so many people have Super Bowl parties. It's not just two or three people watching at home. It's 10 or however many friends you have. And yeah, there's a lot of, back when, you know, Twitter was the world's biggest sports bar, everybody was kind of watching it together. And now, not so much, but I think we'll see the same sorts of things. We'll have cultural events. Obviously, they're bringing the presidential interview back pregame. Taylor Swift will be at the game, and there's prop bets on whether she'll get engaged. Take the under. I think there's going to be,
if you listen to her lyrics, always take the under on that one.
Yeah. So it's going to be one of those really interesting cultural events. And you mentioned the Grammys. I watched the Grammys and I was really intrigued because, okay, we had Taylor Swift, we had Beyonce, we had Jay-Z was there. They really distilled it down. I mean, there were only about 10 awards that they gave on the telecast. There are a ton of performances, all pretty good. But for me, there was one shocking moment. Did you watch it, Jason?
I didn't. I saw the highlights later, but I didn't watch it.
So there was an absolutely shocking moment, because most of the floor, they have it where the Lakers play at. Oh, I'm blanking on what the sponsor is now.
Is that the Quicken, or is that the Intuit Dome? Or no, that's...
Oh, no, it's the it's the Crypto.
Yeah, that's right. The Intuit Dome is Ballmer's. It's the yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The Lakers.
Where they had the Fire Aid, which was also nice. But during the Grammys, there was a moment where Kendrick Lamar, the rapper from L.A., actually very close to where the awards were held, won two awards for like record of the year. As he was walking up there playing his song, and it is the song that is the diss track
for Drake.
Yeah. And there is a very famous line that I don't want to explain, but the crowd all was chanting it. It was like it was a Kendrick crowd, and it was like, whoa, that was on TV? I haven't had a, like, I literally jumped out of my seat, and I was like, I cannot believe that just got on TV. It was amazing. It was a moment for hip hop.
Yeah, and there are not as many communal moments. I think that that's one of the things that we talk about with streaming, and they're coming back. And part of it is the internet allowed us to have some communal moments, which is great. But the problem is the infrastructure of television made it harder because everything became on demand and everything became fractured. But that infrastructure is less; those issues are lessening. And I feel like we will have more simultaneous event things in the future. And we're already seeing it with Netflix, you know, doing wrestling and doing the NFL. I feel like there was a period in there where if you're on the stream, you know, there isn't as much live streaming because a live stream, you can't just preload the content at a content delivery network node instead. And that's becoming less of an issue now, where I feel like the challenge, though, as you're right, is that Twitter was sort of like a place to do that. Although I have fond memories of when did the Red Sox win the World Series for the first time in ages? 2004?
04.
Yeah. I was on a group thread, like iChat thread with people I worked with during that. And it was the most amazing, and it was, oh, you know, it wasn't even that. It was the one where Grady Little didn't take out Pedro. So it was when they lost. Mm-hmm. I was on a group chat during that with Red Sox fans, and it was amazing. And I thought, this is the future. And it sort of is. And, you know, it's coming and going, but the communal moments, they can happen. And since this is also a podcast about kind of the business of this, I will say, this is what you pay the big money for, because there are, not because the audiences are bigger than they used to be, it's because there are fewer opportunities to reach the big audiences. And so if you've got that, and the Super Bowl is the prime example of that, like, that is why marketing campaigns are hinged on the Super Bowl, and to a lesser extent, the Oscars, to the point where you see ads in advance of the event that are just setting you up for the ad at the event. And that's the power of that rare simultaneous communal moment, that if you're Fox in this case for the Super Bowl, you spend a lot of money to get the game, but you're going to make a lot of money because everybody's watching.
Exactly. I'm intrigued. You know, we had earlier this year, it was earlier last year, there was the Jake Paul Mike Tyson fight.
Right.
And boxing is fractured. It's a niche sport at this stage. Those of us who still follow it have to follow it from Saudi Arabia 90% of the time. But they had a joke of a fight. There were technical problems with it, but a lot of people watched it. So I'm curious, do they go more for that? Obviously, they've done more live things. They had a great telecast of the NFL. Or do we try to get something like, you know, is the final season of Stranger Things going to be just a binge-a-thon where everybody's talking about it? Or, you know, the third season of Squid Game? Can the streaming services come out? Severance is kind of a moment right now for Apple TV. If you get a big enough show in streaming, especially for Netflix, that still regularly, you know, drops all the shows, does it become one weekend of communal viewing and talking about it and saying, oh my God, did you see that? You idiot, why did you spoil me? You know, there are tons of those, but I'm curious which will be more valued.
Yeah. No, I mean, sports rights are expensive, but then again, scripted content is expensive. But you're trying to build those audiences. And the long standing, like the whole time that I've been doing this podcast, question with Netflix is, does Netflix really want to spend sports rights? I think Ted Sarandos said famously that, you know, you don't own sports rights, you rent them. And that's a problem for Netflix. So how much the Jake Paul fight was a Netflix creation, essentially, whereas the NFL games, they have to pay the NFL for that. So it's a thing to it's just, these are all things. I feel like the Super Bowl, even though most people will probably watch it on broadcast in the U.S. still, broadcast or cable, the fact is, I feel like it hits at the heart of a lot of the topics that we cover on this podcast, because it is about new and old ways of viewing things, aggregating audiences together. What is the business? How does that work? How does it break down and change our viewing of it? And in this case with Fox, what's interesting is that Fox does not have, and this is going to be one of the stories we're going to talk about in a minute, does not have the streaming strategy that ABC, NBC, CBS, the ESPN, the other NFL partners have. Now, Fox has some advantages there too, including Tubi, which you mentioned, and I mentioned it with Joe 2 weeks ago, that, you know, they're going to put the Super Bowl on Tubi, which is great. Because that means if you are, you know, somebody like my daughter, who's in her, you know, early 20s and is out of college, like if she and her friends want to do a Super Bowl party, they don't have cable, but they have the internet and they have Tubi and they have a, like a TV box, so they can get the Super Bowl and put it on. And that was a case that, you know, until the last like 3 or 4 years, you couldn't do it, or it was too complicated. Now we're there. So that's great. And it's good for Fox and it's good for Tubi, which has some momentum anyway, to get it on even more boxes, installed on more devices and all of that. I did want to mention, by the way, Fox 4K. I put a little note in. You probably laughed when you saw it. I just want to do a little complaint. They're going to broadcast the Super Bowl in 4K, except it's fake. It's not real. Which is fine. I mean, it's fine. I found a story. I'll put it in the show notes on a site called streaminglearningcenter.com, which seems to be from basically information from engineers who build the infrastructure for broadcasts at venues, saying the switches they use for all of their cameras cannot support 4K. And so what they can do is they can do 1080p HDR, which honestly, a lot of people who have 4K will tell you the biggest thing, the most noticeable improvement on a 4K TV is the high dynamic range, not the 4K resolution, which unless you have a very large screen or are sitting very close, you can't tell. So they can stream it at a high bit rate. It's a 1080 signal, which honestly, their broadcast is at 720. So it's higher quality than they're actually broadcasting at this point. And it's high dynamic range. So there are some advantages to it. They talk about it being 4K, though. I just want to say it's not 4K, but it with HDR and with the, you know, with a 5.1 audio, it still will look pretty good.
So is the one on Tubi the same? Because they're touting that as a 4K broadcast.
If they're saying Tubi is 4K, it's the same thing. And it'll be on YouTube TV. You'll get the 4K broadcast as well. And so it'll be higher quality than the 720p, but it's really just upscaled 1080p with HDR. But the high dynamic range and the color palette that comes with it can make a difference. I don't know if you've noticed this, but soccer is a good example of this, although college football is also a good example, and Fox does it there, where there's the standard broadcast and then there's the HDR 4K HDR broadcast. And in soccer, it's generally the world feed versus the NBC feed, and so it's different announcers. But what you really notice is the colors look different, the brightness level is different, and I would say, I don't know if I notice a lot more detail, but I do think that I think the bit rate is higher, which means I think that there probably is a better picture. But the big things I notice are that it's a very different, like in college football is the same way. The colors look different, and that's because the dynamic range and the color space that they're using are very different. Now, good or bad, my issue with it is not, I actually think it does look better if that's all you're watching, but when I'm switching between channels, I can't do it because it's such a different experience.
There's so few of them that I don't know whether I think it looks worse. I don't know if there's two things that affect this. First is there's so few of these. Is it just different that I'm perceiving as worse? Is it just a personal preference? That could be. The other was I had a Sony Bravia TV that upconverted everything.
Right.
And so it was doing so much processing that I don't know whether that was messing with things or messing with my perception. Maybe the upconverting was so good. Now I have this 100-inch Hisense, which doesn't do the same kind of up converting, and I can see the difference, but it's also 100 inches, so I don't care.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think some of it is just getting used to it. I think the high dynamic range looks beautiful and the color, the different color palette looks beautiful, but it's not what we're used to. And I know we've mentioned this before. When I was a kid, I didn't know what I was watching, but I knew that CBS color palette for football games was warm and NBC's was cold. And I couldn't have used even those color temperature terms, but I knew that a CBS game didn't look like an NBC game. And I think the thing with a lot of this 4K HDR stuff is it doesn't look like you expect, and it doesn't look like any of the other content you see. And therefore it is a real adaptation process. I remember when I first saw HD in the Olympics, 2000 or the Athens Olympics. So 2004, it was mind blowing, but it was also very weird because it didn't look like TV. It looked like something different. Right. Now we're all kind of used to it. Yeah. Anyway, so
you would go into Best Buy and see, you know, the demo TVs and you're just like, whoa, blown look at that. It was always something nature.
Yeah.
It was always flying over Ireland with the Olympics, or something.
Cause the Olympics were the first thing I saw at home in HD. And it was, my memory was that you could see the swimmers in the pool in under the water and you could see them clearly. And you could see the faces of individual people in the audience, which, you know, now we're used to it again, but back in the day, standard def sports, the crowd was just like a bunch of flickery blobs.
That's a suggestion.
And now you can focus on individual people. You can be like, who's that guy in the third row and what's he eating? Yeah. And you can like see it all, but that wasn't, so we may get used to it, but I was also fascinated as a tech guy by the fact that when people say, well, why don't you shoot in 4K? Can't you get can't Fox, afford 4K cameras? The answer is, of course they can. And in fact, several of the cameras there are absolutely 4K cameras because they will capture them and sometimes they'll zoom in. Yeah. That's, you get some of those slow-mo zooms where they're 4 or even 8K and it allows them to zoom a lot better. But the whole networking infrastructure that's used to feed all those into the control truck and all of that, it is still seen as not practical. And they're all like, well, yes, those switches are coming, but it's a huge infrastructure upgrade. And keep in mind that Fox doesn't bring their infrastructure to the Superdome. There's also a Superdome, in this case, infrastructure. So it's too complicated. But it's things to keep in mind when they say it's going to be in 4K. It will be higher quality than on your local Fox affiliate, but it's not the same.
Exactly. Have you seen Cosm, the sports bar?
Mm-mm.
There was a big thing on CBS this morning. It's this immersive sports bar that has this, it's kind of like a mini sphere. They've got an 80-foot screen inside. It looks like you're sitting courtside at an NBA game, or, you know, sideline seats for, they did the national championship. And you go to this sports bar, they've got one in LA, they've got one in Dallas. I think they're saying Atlanta was the next one. But yeah, they're spending tons of money on this. The interesting thing to me, CBS did a story on this. It's on YouTube now. It's COSM. They have their own cameras that they have to install. And so I was like, okay, that's interesting. It's kind of like the Vision Pro camera that Apple has out now. That I think it was Blackmagic that was doing it.
Right.
But the more interesting thing to me was, if you've got to have your own cameras, you're not taking some of these feeds. So now we're getting into a rights issue. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, this giant screen sports bars putting tickets up to watch the Super Bowl, Fox isn't going to be happy about spending $1 billion dollars on broadcasting it and not taking their feed and their ads and everything. So it's intriguing. I really like the concept, but I think, man, that is a business I would not want to be in.
No, it sounds dangerous to me.
Yeah.
But who knows? Who knows? Okay. I did want to talk about Venue, which again, it broke 2 weeks ago. And I was reminded it broke right after we talked, actually, that they were killing Venue. And I remember, so a month ago, I remember the conversation I had with you because you said, I don't know what this is for. Like, you were like, I don't understand why Jason explained Venue to me. And I'm like, well, I don't really know anymore, because they were trying to make a skinny bundle and then not let anyone else have a skinny bundle. At the Disney earnings call, apparently Bob Iger was asked about it and said it was redundant, which, no kidding, it was redundant. I think that they were just trying to get out ahead with something they could slap together, and instead they seem to have made the deal, and we're seeing them roll out. Comcast and DirecTV and a bunch of other places are going to offer some quote-unquote skinny bundles that still cost $70 a month, but maybe it'll be a little bit less. Who knows? In the long run, it'll probably not be, probably just everything else will just cost more. You're also seeing another thing, which is every everything's moving up. All the RSNs are going to be moving up onto premium tiers, which is another trend that's happening. ESPN flagship is coming. They talked about that. They talked about how I thought this was really a question I had was, are they going to commit to putting ESPN flagship? So full on all the stuff that's on ESPN cable accessible to cord cutters. Are they going to put that in the ESPN app only, or are they going to put it in the Disney Plus app that has everything else that Disney's doing? And Iger said it will be in the Disney Plus app. So that's pretty wild too, coming this fall. And if all the skinny sports bundles are starting at $70, I don't know what ESPN flagship's going to cost, but it's going to be an interesting fall in terms of sports content on streaming.
I agree. And I think I talked to somebody who used to work at ESPN a lot more recently than I did. And he had some kind of insights into what he thought flagship was going to be. He said he didn't flat out know, but he thinks it's going to be more like a super app than a stream. And
I
figure everybody knows what a super app is, but I think, you know, ESPN Bet is a failure right now. I mean, the kind of background to it is that Penn gambling had a deal with Barstool,
right?
Dumped that, went to ESPN. ESPN was courted by a number of places back when I was at FanDuel. We all wanted them, even though we couldn't say gambling at that point. There was big money from Fanatics. Remember Fanatics, the merchandising company, has their own gambling. There's tons of this happening. So I think ESPN has to monetize this. I think they're going to integrate gambling with it. Yeah. And I wouldn't be stunned if the one thing they're really looking for is the latency. We've talked about this before. Prop play-by-play betting doesn't work on cable. It doesn't work on streaming. It doesn't work anywhere other than in arena. And even that needs special infrastructure.
Right. Right. It's they definitely mentioned that gambling is part of their strategy here. And so integrating, I think I do wonder if how much of that will be integrated in Disney versus in ESPN, because you could build an ESPN, a version of the ESPN app that is dedicated at hardcore sports fans and gamblers. That's got lots of gambling focused stuff. But I think for me, I assume that instead of it being like, oh, you've got flagship, now you can just tune to ESPN2 and see what's on, that's not going to be it. It's going to, I imagine, use a version of the ESPN Plus infrastructure, which of course we know is also the former MLB Advanced Media BAM tech infrastructure. Right. But if you go, so like I'm a UC Berkeley guy, and I also went to UC San Diego. And let me tell you, if you want to watch basketball from UC Berkeley or UC San Diego, you know where you're going to see it? Probably in the ESPN app, because it's either going to be on one on the ACC network, or it's going to be on ESPN Plus.
It still cracks me up.
I know, man. Let me tell you, we went to the women's basketball, and it was against the hated rival of Pitt in Berkeley. Pitt. Why? Conference opponents, go figure.
Wake
but anyway, and so I go in there, and it is ESPN Plus. It's actually kind of brilliant. Like, you're like swiping through, and they're like, there are 8 live basketball games right now. Mm-hmm. And coming up at the top of the hour, there'll be West Coast basketball games are all starting, and it's going to be UC Santa Barbara over here, and it's going to be USF over there. And I think about flagship, and I think, well, that's what it's going to be, right? It's going to be a non-linear. It's going to be event-based. It's going to be what games do you want to see now? And it will be the same content that's on ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, you know, any of the ESPN Overflow channels that they've got, ACC Network, but Big Ten Network, I think, is theirs too.
Yeah.
So, like,
yeah, I think that's Fox. I think that's Fox.
Anyway, so the Overflow Networks, right? That one's Fox, right? SEC Network. SEC Network.
Yeah,
I think ESPN.
Yeah.
So that's what I keep imagining the flagship ultimately will be. It's not going to feel like ESPN channels. It's going to feel like ESPN Plus with the sports you actually want to see, because most people do not want to join with me in watching, you know, UCSD versus UC Irvine in men's Division I basketball on ESPN Plus.
Go Anteaters. I agree. I I still don't know what this thing is going to be. And it was the same with Venue, but ESPN Flagship, obviously we don't know what it is, but I don't know what's so wrong with ESPN Plus. I think...
That's why I keep thinking that ESPN Plus just needs to be part of Flagship, and that's what it is it's ESPN Plus with the extra stuff that they can't put on there right now because it's on the cable channel and therefore is not allowed to go on Plus, that it ends up being more of that. And then I would, if I had to guess, that would be what it is, plus that they'll sell you know, channels of like Fox. Yeah. One of the items here is Fox is going to do a streaming service, and it's going to be sports and news. And Lachlan Murdoch said they're going to absolutely do it. He said a bunch of things about complementing pay TV subscriptions, but I do believe it's going to be one of those things that allows them to have something you can pay for to see Fox Sports, which currently there's no Paramount mm-hmm. Plus for CBS or Peacock for NBC. They don't have that for Fox. So this will give them that. But I also think that, like, if I'm Flagship, and given the Venue is dead now, especially, it's like, I offer a Fox Sports add-on in Flagship that gets you Fox Sports, and those games just get added to your list, and you move on. That feels like the best product to me.
I agree with you 100%. I just don't think that would have taken ESPN a year and a ton of people to do. I've been looking for some event that they have to wait for X to happen, and then they can do it. But I can't find it. Maybe it's out there. Maybe that's
it.
It
might be contractual. It might literally just be their contracts with the cable and satellite providers.
But I can't find one that might well be it. But it seems like that wouldn't be a big issue. The two big ones now, they've made deals with everybody.
They have made deals.
I mean, there was the Fubo thing, which I still don't understand. But the more I look at it, and you mentioned Fox, I think it's that they're going to make this super app with Fox. I don't think they're ever going to launch that streaming service. I think they're going to get bought. I think the whole succession drama we're seeing, you know, Rupert Murdoch showed up in the Oval Office unannounced the other day. I think they're going to sell that thing. And I think the easy buyer is Amazon. You merge Fox News with the Washington Post. You merge all those Fox Sports properties with Prime Video. It just works.
Interesting. Well, it's possible. I mean, certainly there is a precedent for a streaming service to be announced and then never ship. So,
exactly.
Yeah. And although I think, again, if I'm Bob Iger and I'm all the smart people who are working at Disney on ESPN and ESPN Flagship, and I know I've said this before, but just to repeat it, I think the smartest place to be this, you know, Catholic, ecumenical, like everything sports, and say, and go to your former joint venture partner, David Zaslav, and say, we want Bleacher Report Turner Sports to be an add-on in Flagship. And we want, go to Comcast and Brian Roberts and say, if you'll make a deal with us, we'll, you know, let's sell NBC Sports and Peacock into Flagship. And we'll just, it's the Apple TV and Amazon channels argument, but just like, let's just do it and call it sports. And that's what it is. I don't know, because ESPN being the primary brand for sports viewing. And I know that Julia often talked about that on this podcast, the idea that you go beyond just your content and you make it the place that everybody goes. And I'm not going to draw too many lines here, but I'll just say Julia works at Disney now. What's she doing over there? Like, so they got a lot of smart people is what I'm saying. A lot of smart people thinking about Flagship. We'll see where that goes.
They do. And I'll be very curious to see what the heck it is and when it launches. Yeah, and
it's going to be a big move. I don't know if it's like the solution, right? It may have its own huge series of problems, but it will feel like the single biggest sports streaming thing to have happened, I think.
Yes. But I keep coming back to knowing Disney enough that I still think Disney wants to be a little bit hands off with gambling. So does that become the place they can put all the stuff? I've always been surprised that, you know, they put some of the Hulu shows and some of the very non-Disney friendly. What was the Oscar film with Emma Stone? I can't even remember the name of it now.
Oh, but, Poor Things, something like that. Yeah. They're over it, kid-friendly film. No, they're over that part of it, and it's always been that way in Disney Plus the rest of the world. But when they integrated Hulu, they got it in the States. But you're right. That's one of my questions is ESPN Inside Disney Plus more of a sports viewing experience, whereas if you want the full on stats, money lines, betting, you go to the ESPN app, and it's a parallel experience, but it's more focused on a harder core audience than a more casual sports fan audience at Disney. I don't know. I love multi-view. Everybody knows I love a quad box. I'm not sure even if they build ESPN into Disney Plus that they're going to give me multi-view in Disney Plus. And that's okay. If they're like, look, if you want to watch four things at once, go to the ESPN app with you. Go over there. It's like, okay, fair. That's fair.
And if it's broader, you know, if you want to watch, you know, a Big West game, if you want to watch that late night MLB game, if you want to watch, I don't know, Bob Iger's Angel City Club. Well, I guess that's on Paramount for a while, but, those kind of, you know, we'll joke about ESPN Ocho, but I actually watch some of that stuff when they put it on.
For sure.
If that's a much broader thing, and then they bring in the hot stuff to Disney Plus, that makes sense to me.
There was just a deal today, and I thought it was funny because it was an ESPN Plus content deal. ESPN made a content deal with Major League Rugby. So this is a U.S. rugby league, professional rugby league, and they are going to put some of the matches on ESPN2, and the rest, the balance of the schedule, will be on ESPN+. And that's just scooping up another niche sport and saying, you know, it's in the mix now, and they don't need, you know, they're not probably going to sell very many subscriptions to ESPN+ because of their rugby or because of their water polo or because of their cricket, but they pour it all kind of in there, and it's the place you go for sports, which is that's what the brand is all about. And yeah, you're right. Maybe it's the niche stuff that also is living over in a proper ESPN app, and it's just kind of the big ticket items that are in Disney Plus. I don't know.
Yeah.
This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Memberful. If you create online content like I do, you have likely thought about diversifying your income. Or maybe you're just getting started and you want to engage with some of those early members of your audience. Whatever stage of the process you're at, in terms of creating content on the internet and finding a platform and building an audience, Memberful is the best way to diversify your revenue stream and make those connections with your audience. Memberful is what I use. I use it for The Incomparable and Six Colors, and it's what we use for all of the memberships here at Relay as well. Memberful lets you offer membership perks and exclusive content to all of your loyal followers, giving you a full control over who has access to read your posts or read your newsletters or take your online courses or listen to your podcasts or listen to special versions of your podcasts, to join private communities, and a whole lot more. This is why we use Memberful. It allows you to build a closer relationship with your audience. It fosters a sense of community. It does this through private Discord chats, forums, discussion groups, and exclusive events. And I'll tell you, it integrates effortlessly with WordPress, which is what I'm using. It lets me create a fully functional membership website for my business. It's integrated into WordPress, which means I have all the other WordPress plugin access. There are a robust API, so if you don't use WordPress, you or your developer can build other things. Webhooks extend functionality. It really plugs into a whole bunch of other web services, so you can put together maybe MailChimp or another email provider. Discord community building is really easy. So many different ways to connect from Memberful to other places and piece together a robust system that you can use to connect with your community and have another revenue stream for your content. Like I said, I've been using Memberful since the beginning. It's been great. It's a huge part of my livelihood. The ad market, especially in blogs, kind of, if not vanished, it's much less. I was originally thinking that I would make a lot of my living on advertising on my blog. And without Memberful and the support of my readers and listeners, I would have a hard time supporting myself and my family. It is a huge part of what I do now. And that has allowed me to continue being an independent content creator for a decade now. So I would highly recommend that you check out Memberful. You want to monetize with a partner, not a platform. Whether you're growing, launching, changing platforms, whatever, Memberful is committed to providing exceptional support at every stage of your journey. With Memberful, you're not just getting a tech solution, although you are getting a good one. You are also gaining a trusted partner. They are there, ready to offer personalized guidance. I can tell you that is absolutely true, all the way from setup to strategy. Go now to memberful.com/downstream and get started with Memberful. Once again, that is memberful.com/downstream. Thank you to Memberful for providing me with so much support over the years and for supporting Downstream. The regional sports networks, a very common conversation for us to have here about regional sports networks, except this one really made me laugh. There's a brand new RSN. It's called RSN. It's the Rangers Sports Network. Oh, it made me laugh so much. So the Rangers, we knew they were going to do this, but they have now announced it, and they've taken their team president, I think, is going to be the CEO and the chairman of the board for this.
Yeah,
and they're putting
that
their
was telling,
and they're putting their event, their venue rental stuff in it too. So like, if you want to be at the Globe Life Park for a concert, that, you know, it's their out here. It's Giants Entertainment, right? It's like the Giants have their little subsidiaries. So they're putting that in here, but they're putting their new RSN in, and Dallas is a very large market. They have gotten cable and satellite to sign up to carry it. And so it's an interesting wrinkle in the sense that the Rangers decided not to do the sort of, we'll let Major League Baseball produce our show and we'll have like a kind of a phantom cable channel like they have in Phoenix and they have in San Diego, where it's like, it's just, I was visiting my mom and there's a Diamondbacks channel that doesn't have anything on it, but I know that's where the games go.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we're going to be like the Yankees. We're going to have our own cable channel and we're going to get it everywhere. And they did it. So this is like a totally different thing than almost any other baseball team is doing right now.
Yeah. And I think it comes flat down to the owners. The owners, I won't go through the whole details. We can remember when that franchise was very nearly bankrupted by a media guy and Tom Hicks. It was sold at bankruptcy to a pair of oil men. And there was some Mark Cuban involvement. He didn't get it because he didn't have nearly enough cash. A couple of oil men. Well, Neil Liebman, who you mentioned, the president of the club, is an oil man. He's a, I think it was 2% he had early on. I don't know how much he owns now. They're always shuffling those percentages. But Neil Liebman is known as a deal maker. This guy puts stuff together. You know, he was in the oil patch. If you watch Landman, he was kind of the John Hamm character. And he bought and sold companies. He bought and sold oil leases. And that's kind of what he's done. He's put together a pretty amazing set of deals. Whether the product is any good remains to be seen, but they've got really good people. I'm optimistic-ish. You know, I don't even think it's going to be available to me other than maybe through MLB TV to see the broadcast, all the ancillary stuff I'm curious about, and I've got enough friends down there that I'll hear about it. Shout out to Jamie Newberg and Scott Lucas. But it's one of those things where I'm very curious if other people watch this around baseball and say, hey, I could do that too. I've talked at length about how I think MLB needs to kind of wrap up these rights. And I think this might be a play on that, because if they can show something of value, then MLB will have to buy it.
That's where it gets interesting. My thought exactly is that if Rob Manfred, the commissioner of baseball, has said that he wants to build a national streaming strategy, and you look around and you say, well, the problem is that there are a bunch of teams that are under contract, like the Dodgers, and there are a bunch of teams that own their, or there are some teams that own their own or partially own their own RSN, like the Yankees with the YES Network, that you end up thinking, well, how is he going to do it? And that those different teams, if they have successful businesses that are on the outside, they're not going to want to give them up. And there are so many political things happening in baseball right now with the you know, more talk about future strikes and lockouts, but the truth is, as it has been since the 80s, the biggest conflict in baseball is not between players and owners. It's between the high revenue owners and the low revenue owners.
Mm-hmm.
And this, if you're the Rangers, you look at this and say, well, if we give it to MLB, we have no leverage. But if we build our own business and it's profitable, then when Rob Manfred comes and says, hey, we want to be a big happy family, he's got to write us a big check.
Yep. Yep, big checks. Look, yeah, these are all, save maybe a couple, billionaires. And, you know, John Fisher used to be a billionaire. Oddly enough, he just got named to the executive committee. Yeah,
what a reward for all of his nonsense.
And Bruce Sherman, a billionaire, but hasn't spent any money on the Marlins. Even Rubenstein. Hey,
these guys didn't become rich by spending lots of money.
So yeah, it's going to be crazy, but that's definitely where I think it's going. And these are viable rights. I did a big article on this at Under the Knife talking about, you know, even with the Dodgers, which is billions of dollars, I think it ended up being, there's like still $3 or $4 billion left on that 25, 30 year deal. Yeah. That's viable.
Yeah.
You know, sure. Larry Ellison spends that on yachts.
Or negotiable, right? Like negotiable to pay them back some of that in exchange for losing some of their exclusivity, right? Where if you're the cable company that made that deal, you think they don't want to spend less money on that, right? So maybe Major League Baseball comes in and says, we'll give you a $1 billion haircut or whatever. If you give us if you turn down your exclusivity and let us resell this or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. There's ways to do it.
Another little RSN note to put in here: Altitude. So this is Stan Kroenke, who owns the Nuggets and the Avalanche in Denver, as well as the Rams and my beloved Arsenal. He got in a dispute with Xfinity, with Comcast in Denver, where basically his sports teams on their RSN have been not available to cable customers in Denver for a couple of years. I want to say it's been a protracted dispute, but apparently there has now been a detente there. But it is, they buried the hatchet on a premium content tier, which is the big trend in non-streaming sports right now. Is it's what used to be called, I guess, the cliff path. People talk about it, where it's like all of these RSNs made lots of money because every single person who subscribed to cable, a certain number of dollars went to the RSN. And by moving them all up onto, I think Xfinity calls it the more sports and entertainment tier, people have to opt to pay more to get it, which means it's a fraction of the total subscriber base who are having part of their cable bill kicked to the RSN. That's bad. Even if they're getting a lot more per subscriber, it's bad for them, because there used to be millions of people who didn't watch any sports at all who still were giving them $3 a month because they were the local sports team. Also, those tiers are all getting jacked up. I believe they're going to all be on Comcast. They're all going to be $16 a month pretty soon, even though I think they were like $9 before. So there's a lot of change in the economics there. But this seems to be where we're headed with all of this stuff. And certainly locally here in the Bay Area, the same thing happened. Comcast kicked their own RSN that they own, NBC Sports Bay Area and California, onto the sports and entertainment tier at an extra price. And basically said, look, if you want to see the Giants or the Warriors, you got to pay us, and you got to pay us more than you're paying us now.
You know, is part of that because Comcast / Xfinity is spinning that off? That goes with the SpinCo group, right?
No, I don't. Well, it's unclear to me whether they're not talking about our local RSNs, and
the Philly one is.
Okay, that's interesting. The local RSNs also have some weird ownership because, like, I think the Giants are an equity partner in the RSN in the Bay Area. So I don't know, but this is, yes, that's a good question. Is like, are they strategizing for SpinCo, where it's a totally different service that owns its assets? I don't know.
Yeah, it's that one's gonna be. There's gonna be so much. You know, I kind of look forward to the fact that we're not going to run out of things to talk about.
Oh,
there's going to be consolidation. There's going to be deals. We know Discovery has to do something. AMC is making moves. The Paramount deal looks like it's going to go through. Right. What the heck is Warner Brothers Discovery going to do? Amazon has a big pile of cash. Apple has a bigger pile of cash. There's talk of Berkshire Hathaway with the biggest pile of cash who wants to do something if there's an opportunity. And there's been, we know the Saudis are lurking, or the Qataris, or whichever petrostate gets in first.
And Comcast is interesting because they don't have that many of these, right? They've got like three or four. And so what strategically, like, it's not a company wide strategy because it is very limited in the number of markets they're in. Philly, the Bay Area, and I think there's like one.
Yeah, they're good markets, though.
But they are.
Big, yeah.
And there's value in those assets. So the question is sort of like, what do they want to do in the long run? How long do those contracts do? Do they pass it off to a partner? Do they get bought out by, for example, their sports partners? Who knows? I mean, would Joe Lacob and the Giants ownership group kind of walk in and say, let's just take the RSN from you and we'll run it ourselves? Are they smart enough business people to say, we don't want to be in the RSN business anymore? I don't know. The Rangers think that it's not a bad time to have that business. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. One of the great things about this podcast is there is never a shortage of things to talk about. I did want to mention, you talked about Apple and their pile of money. MLS season is starting. And of course, Apple is the MLS broadcaster. They're an exclusive. But I wrote a story. I get to actually link to a story I wrote on this podcast now about Apple's announcement that they have media partners for the MLS this season. It's Xfinity and DirecTV. And here is a funny thing. So here's a story. My mom, when I grew up, we were in a football house, but my mom in the last 10 years after my dad died has really gotten into baseball. Which is great because it's a long season and there's lots to see and the games go on long. And when I visit her, we sit there and we just watch baseball. And I showed her my MLB TV package and she loved it, but she doesn't want to use an Apple TV or anything like that. And so she can just call Cox Cable and say, give me the MLB package. And then there's like 10 channels at the high end of the cable box that show you all the baseball games, just like you're doing MLB TV on an app. But this is actually where it started, is a satellite and cable package for this. So my story is that if my mom likes soccer, which she doesn't, we watched an Arsenal match and tried to explain it to her. And she's just like, I don't know what this thing is. Oh, it's 1-0. I said, yeah, I know. All right. So this is the deal that Apple has made. If you're on Xfinity, you can sign up with Xfinity for the MLS package and get it. I'm unclear on whether that'll be on channels or if that's just on the X1 box that Xfinity gives you, but you will be able to sign up without going to Apple and get MLS season pass. And on DirecTV, I know there that it will absolutely be, there will be some channels on your DirecTV box with all the MLS games on them. And there'll be the Apple TV broadcast, but coming through, you'll pay DirecTV and they'll be on DirecTV as on channels on DirecTV, not streaming on the internet. So what Apple is doing, it seems to me, Apple and MLS are thinking, you know, not everybody wants to use the Apple TV app. Maybe we should use some of these more traditional ways of selling a league-wide package. Not an earth-shattering story, but I think it's instructive. A lot of the people I've seen comment on it have said, who are media observers, have said, this feels like Apple and MLS are not happy with the numbers that they're doing right now, and that the pure exclusivity of driving people to the TV app is sort of like gone by the wayside, and they're willing to talk about broader ways of getting people into MLS.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because I think, you know, I know I have an Apple TV app on everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's on my TV, it's on my box, it's on my Xfinity X1 box. 99.9% of the time I use my Apple TV box to watch Apple TV Plus.
So bad. The naming is so bad, but it is what it is.
So the only thing worse is AI. So I don't know whether I could have subscribed to MLS through the Xfinity Apple TV app. I think
this deal means that you could just ask Xfinity to add MLS and
yeah, I think it'll be channels, which is easier, but I don't know whether I could have because I never did.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so it's the billing relationship and it's the availability. And some people are just not comfortable with like,
yeah,
I have to open an app to get, can I just have the channels with the soccer games on it?
Which I'm curious because those are big, but DirecTV is a dying asset. You know, why not Spectrum? Why not Cox?
I'd imagine those are probably deals that they haven't made yet.
It just feels like if you're going to do this, you do it all at once. Or I guess maybe you're putting pressure on Spectrum to do the same deal.
I think these are the deals that they got done by opening day is basically what it feels like to me. But it's interesting to see. They're also, I thought this was kind of funny. In terms of them, they've done 2 years of this, right? So I feel like they have had that sort of in the off season. What else can we try? And one of the things that they've done, so they completely changed sort of when the games were played to be in two major windows on Wednesdays and Saturdays. And in a couple time windows on those days, but only those 2 days. And one of the things
and they red zoned it.
Yeah, exactly. Because they wanted a whip around show and all of that, which my understanding is everybody on DirecTV or maybe it's Xfinity gets the whip around show now for free. That's a thing that they threw in so you can watch like all the games. It's like getting Red Zone for free, but not getting NFL Sunday Ticket. But so they've done all of this and like that's fair. They've also added this Sunday game, which is like Sunday Night Baseball or Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. It is a showcase game. So they are complexifying their time windows for games, but they are creating a single showcase game on Sunday nights. And another interesting thing that is part of the complexity of Apple's product is that will be available to everybody who is an Apple TV Plus subscriber. You don't actually have to be a subscriber to Season Pass. Now, it's not available for free to everybody in the world, but it's available to that larger group of people who don't pay for all of MLS, but will get a game. Part of the complexity here, of course, is that people assume you have to subscribe to NFL or to Apple TV Plus in order to get Season Pass. You actually don't need to. You get a discount if you are a subscriber, but you have to pay for it either way. And you cannot pay for Severance and still get MLS if you want it. So complicated on TV app or TV Plus or TV box or whatever. It's so confusing. But I think it's interesting because after 2 years of sort of like, here's our plan, the launch plan, this is the first sign that they're willing to change their strategy a little bit from what it was 2 years ago.
Yeah. I like it. I know we have a question later that will disagree with me.
I think the quality of the broadcast is very good, but
yeah, I think they're great.
Yeah.
I was surprised that they didn't produce most of it themselves. There was a story out this week that IMG, who was producing it, is doing this year's shows at WWE's studios in Connecticut. And it surprised me that Apple wasn't doing the production because they're high quality. So I just figured they were.
I think my understanding is that so MLB Network does the Friday Night Baseball games for Apple. And my understanding is Apple likes to use existing partners who can produce the stuff for them that they can pay. But they have exacting standards. So it's one of those things where it's like we want it to look like an Apple production. And so like the MLB Friday Night Baseball games don't quite look like MLB Network. They look better and there are more cameras and there are drones and there's the graphics package is different, but it's MLB Network that makes it. So it's sort of like that combo of like, we're going to buy your thing and then we're going to customize it a little bit. And then that's going to be the Apple package. So I'm not surprised they're doing that for
it seemed like too. MLB Network was experimenting on them. It was like, hey, let's throw all this crap on here. And some of it worked, some of it didn't. I thought, you know, it was certainly fine. I didn't think some of the pairings worked. I certainly that drone shot was junk. That thing that ran down the third baseline.
Oh, the track shot, like from the Olympics track and field that they had. Yeah, that was disconcerting. Actually, one of my favorite things about drones in general is that we now get these beautiful hovering shots from impossible locations at stadiums, and they've done those in the MLB Friday Night Baseball broadcasts for Apple, and they've made those were really good, but they've tried other stuff that's dumb. Also, they tried to do next gen stats and next gen betting stuff, and some of that was really misguided in the first year, although it was better in the second year. So, yeah. And I think that that's what Apple with both MLS and baseball, I think what Apple has done as a partner is say, let's try to be different and push the envelope a little bit, because that's Apple, and see what works and what doesn't work. So interesting to see them adapt on top of that.
Okay.
Really quickly, I wanted to mention Comcast, just because, again, earnings season. Comcast lost 139,000 broadband customers. Those are their internet customers. And 311,000 cable TV subscribers in the last 3 months. Neither of those is really great. Now, good news, but it's not good news. Peacock saw revenue increase 28% to $1.3 billion in the quarter and had 36 million subscribers. But the analysts thought they might have 38 million. Also, they cut their losses in half. They still lost money on Peacock, but only 372 million. Except, you know, Disney Plus and even Paramount now are profitable, at least report profits in streaming. And this was all part of a larger story. It was a link to the Screen Time newsletter from Bloomberg, but this in particular is Hannah Miller reporting this. There is growing skepticism as Comcast considers SpinCo and all of that about the health of the NBC and Peacock business, and the thought that there has to be something else that happens here, because whether it's a strategic partner or a merger or something like that. In fact, I saw a long piece this weekend about how the real thing that Comcast should probably do is split into three and really take their business apart. But Brian Roberts isn't going to do that, but that's what they probably should do. But I think it's interesting to see that Comcast, very powerful, has a lot of money, but their business is in trouble. Yeah. And it goes beyond spinning off a few cable TV assets into SpinCo.
The thing they didn't spin off is a bunch of debt, which is normally what we see with that. But SpinCo is actually going to be, from what I've read, pretty in good position to do things, rather than just like Warner Brothers is just struggling to pay back the mountain of debt that they have.
Right. I think maybe the intent there is for SpinCo to then go out and buy cable assets from other places and kind of put them all together. But it's something to watch, because Peacock, I like Peacock. I use it for, there's some shows soccer on it, but also it's my soccer feed, right? Which is great.
It was my racing feed for IndyCar. I'm a big IndyCar guy, but now that's on Fox. So I'll have to watch Tubi.
Yeah.
I just can't take Tubi seriously, because I have to say Tubi.
Tubi. Or not Tubi. That's the question. All right, let's do a few letters before we go. Letters from listeners. We're running a little late, so I don't have time for all of them. But this one I saved for you, Will. Patrick wrote in to say, it was fascinating to hear Will lavish praise on Apple TV Plus, Apple Sports, and the sports alerts on Apple TV. These have been widely derided in the Apple nerdosphere. No real point, just a fun comparison. And I had the same thought, and I was going to bring it up, and we kind of moved on, but I love that, because yes, there are so many people who are so angry about the sports alerts and about the betting lines in the Apple Sports app. And it was interesting to hear you come from a different standpoint, where you're like, isn't it great? They got those sports alerts.
Wait, so let me get this straight. I'm not a nerd.
You are not a computer nerd, I think. Your card has been revoked. That's what's happened.
Yeah. So I'm a niche nerd now. Yeah, it's a matter of taste. I can see where it would annoy people, but I think it's useful to me as, you know, a sports guy.
I think it's a great feature. I think having it be turned on by default and not asking you is weird, because there are a lot of people who don't care about sports. And
it does pop up with things like, it'll give me the alert. Like, I follow the Vegas Golden Knights, and so I've got them on alert. And the weirdest times, it'll just pop up, hey, here's something. And if I'm in the middle of my rewatch of Severance and the fact that they're about to play, then it's like, it does kind of.
We were watching a movie, an Oscar nominated movie, and it was on a box that I hadn't turned. I've turned this off everywhere else, but we were watching on a box that it was at my mom's house, actually. It was that one. And it was like, hey, the close game with the Warriors or whatever. And I'm like, guys, I'm not. But the fact is, there are contexts where I would be like, oh, that's interesting. That Warriors game got close. I do want to tune that in. That Cal game got close. I want to tune that in. Cal, you know, I'm not watching all the Cal basketball. Or they get behind and I'm like, yeah, forget about it. The Warriors get behind. And I'm like, no, they tied it up in the third quarter. I'm like, okay, well, maybe we'll switch over there. But the default, I think, is what, and it's hard to find how to turn it off in the settings. That's the other problem. But Patrick writing in about that made me laugh. And I think the point is, yes, that a lot of the conversation in the Apple podcast nerdosphere especially was about by people who don't like sports. And like, I totally get it, but there is another perspective for the people who, that's why that feature exists, is for people like us who actually do care about it. This is a great one. I wanted to mention this from Chris, who said, regarding your discussion of how bad ad targeting actually is, right? Because we talk a lot about ads, but you know, salespeople like to make you believe that they have powers that they do not have. And that's why they're salespeople. Chris says, I live in Houston, and at least a quarter of the YouTube ads I see and the dynamically inserted podcast ads I hear are in Spanish. I get that demographically. If the only thing you know about me is Houston and you're aiming for a Spanish-speaking audience, odds are decent. But why would an English podcast run Spanish ads or YouTube give me Spanish ads when I've used it since before Google bought them and I've never watched a video in Spanish? So I think you make a good point, although I will point out there are lots of people who understand Spanish who watch English language content. And I have seen this on my local sports channels as well. Mm-hmm. Where I will sometimes get Spanish ads and I think, well, there's a big population here in the Bay Area and it doesn't really bother me. In fact, sometimes I'm fascinated by these ads that I've never seen before, but I think if they knew you as well as sometimes they say that they know you, they wouldn't serve you that ad.
Right.
They don't know you that well.
Yeah. I get those sometimes and I find them fascinating. I'll watch a Liga MX game and it'll be in Spanish. It'll be on, what is it, TUDN, which is kind of the ESPN of Mexico. And you'll see like an ad for T-Mobile, and it's a totally different thing, but I kind of understand some words because it's the same kind of campaign that you see. You know, Magenta is the same, pretty much. Mm. So you see a Taco Bell ad, and you're like, really? Isn't that kind of insulting? I guess Chalupa's work in Mexico. But yeah, those are fascinating. But I don't suddenly, I don't speak Spanish, so I'm glad they're not, and they shouldn't be. But even after I watch things in Spanish, I don't get more Spanish ads.
Yeah. I think Chris's point here is interesting and nuanced and good in the sense that I think what it shows you is that ad targeting and personalizing of ads just isn't as good as people think it is. And there, look, I don't want to downplay the paranoia of everybody's tracking you. Everybody wants your data. That's all true.
True.
But what I found, and it's a decade old now, so I, you know, maybe things have changed, but like I spent a lot of time talking to people who did digital ad sales. And what I find is everybody wants more data. And so they collect more data. And guess what? Nobody uses the data because it's too much and they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And in the end, if you have a salesperson who's like, oh man, I sold a lot of these Spanish language ads. What are we going to do? We don't get paid unless we serve them all. And what ends up happening is YouTube is like, want us to just target like Houston. There's a lot of Spanish speakers in Houston. Why don't we just roll them all in there? And sure, some of those will go to English speakers, but a lot of them will go to people who understand Spanish. And so you get them, Chris, because not because you speak Spanish, but because you're close enough for the purposes of people who really want to serve that ad so they get paid.
It's a question of whether you're serving a zip code or whether you're serving an area code.
Well, and if you're serving an IP address, this is another computer thing, right? Like if I go, like when I log into my Apple account, it thinks I'm somewhere I'm not. And that has to do with how I'm not even doing anything hinky there. Literally, I have AT&T fiber, and where AT&T fiber's IP addresses come out is not where I live. And when I had Comcast before, it was a different city in mm-hmm. in Northern California, but it was not where I lived, because they're using IP addresses. Sometimes, depending on the device you're using, right? Like on an Apple TV, it doesn't have location services. It's not going to really tell you where it is geographically. It has to rely on IP. If you're on an iPhone or an Android phone, it may try to geo-target you if you have those things turned on, but it may also have to fall back. So anyway, what ends up happening is it's all kind of fuzzy, and they take their best shot, but mm-hmm. what they're not doing is targeting you, Chris, personally. And so you end up, and this is yeah. this is the ugly, right? The salespeople will tell you, no, it's great, it's great, it's great. But the truth is, some amount of what gets served digitally is just served completely inappropriately, and it's garbage. Or if you've ever been in that, have you ever fallen down in that pit where it's a break and you get a bunch of dynamically inserted video ads in a break, and it's literally two ads over and over again for the entire yeah. break? It's like constantly. Those people don't want their ads run yeah. back to back for 4 minutes, right? Like they want it run once. They don't want to pay eight times for the same 30-second ad to play eight times. But
I get a lot of those remnant ads. I think the other thing is the paranoia kind of works for the ad people, because when they do get it right, you're like, I was just talking about that. They've got the microphones on, which I know is fake. But right. you get one that's right, and you're like, oh, they're targeting me now. It's become yeah. a joke in my household. Is like when they get one right, you're like, oh, they're after us. I get, like I said, I get so many like adult diaper ads, and I right. do not need adult diapers. I mean, it's not like I'm in an adult diapers neighborhood.
I don't know. Again, it's very mysterious. Or they're correlating with other data, and again, they figure that there's a 30% chance, so they serve.
Yeah.
This is the classic thing about spammers, about anybody who's doing like spam email or spam phone calls or spam texts that where they're trying to con you into sending them money. Like they do it because it works. It might only work 0.01% of the time, but if they can send thousands of them, they'll find the one or two times. And so this is not quite, I'm not saying that all online ads are scams, but I am saying that they know that if they serve 100, they'll find the 20 people out of 100 that are mm-hmm. their target. And sometimes that's good enough for them.
Absolutely.
And the other 80 people are like, what the hell? I don't need those diapers. And they're like, yeah, but you know, somewhere in there are the 20 people who do. Before we go, I love doing the TV picks thing. Will, do you have a TV show that you'd like to endorse for us?
Well, yeah, I would kind of like to re-endorse Ludwig, because Yay. I watched it and it was phenomenal. And I want so season good. 2 right now. And I think I emailed you during my watching of it. There's only 6 episodes. Why don't the British make a full season? I get it.
I think it's money, and also sometimes the availability of the actors. But yeah. Ludwig was so good. It's on BritBox, I believe, in the US now, or it will yeah. be shortly. So people should check it out.
But I think I emailed you during my watch and said there are really big similarities to the CBS show Elsbeth.
Right.
They kind of do the murder of the week. There's an overarching thing. I'm curious whether Ludwig's overarching thing can be a multi-season thing yeah. or whether they'll have to kind of pivot from that. No spoilers. But Elsbeth is, I'm not a network guy at all, let alone network procedurals. But Carrie Preston, I didn't watch Good Wife or the other.
Good Fight.
The other one they had. Yep. Good Fight. Didn't watch that. So I wasn't familiar with the character even. This just works. It's a quirky little fun popcorn show where you 45 minutes later, you've solved the mystery and trying to figure it, except the only mystery left is why she has all those tote bags.
It's a great genre. The quirky detective who has difficulty navigating life, but can solve a mystery.
Yeah, of course.
And it goes back to Sherlock Holmes, right? But there are so many different variations mm-hmm. of it now. There's CBS just launched Watson off the back of the AFC Championship game, which is mm-hmm. it's basically House, which is funny because House was a show based on Sherlock Holmes. What if Sherlock Holmes was a doctor? Mm-hmm. And Watson is basically like House, except it's Watson and not Sherlock Holmes. Okay. And I'm glad you liked Ludwig. And Elsbeth is a good follow-on for those who would like those kinds of mysteries. That's awesome.
What's yours this week?
I am going, well, so As I'm scrolling my timelines, I'm finding a lot of people who are feeling real stressed out about things that are happening in the world. And my wife and I have felt real stressed out about stuff too. And we were reminded, and she said to me, you know what? I think it is time to rewatch one of our all-time favorites. And it's Detectorists, another delightful British TV show. It is available, I believe, on Acorn, but you can also watch it on at least a couple fast channels. Just have it. I think it's on Pluto. And you can find it pretty much. It's available somewhere. It's short. There are only three full seasons. This is Mackenzie Crook, who you may know from The Office and from the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. It is a labor of love for him. He wrote and directed the whole show, basically. There's only about 20 episodes. It's him and Toby Jones, who you have seen in a million things.
He's one of, before IMDb, he was one of those guys.
Those guys. He's in everything. Usually he's a bad guy, but not here. And Detectorists is a show about two middle-aged men whose hobby is walking through beautiful summertime green British fields. So soothing, with their metal detectors, looking for treasure and mostly finding bottle caps. And their lives in a small town in rural England. It is gentle. It is soothing. It is funny, legitimately funny, laugh out loud funny at times, but it's the right kind of vibe when you're feeling stressed out. So I seriously, probably in my top 10 of all time TV shows. Detectorists. So
British ASMR TV.
It is like the stakes are so low. I mean, there are life stakes, right? The idea is the Gareth's character kind of hasn't grown up, and his girlfriend, who he also hasn't married, has a job, but he's sort of underemployed and doing metal detecting, but slowly working his way through school because he dreams of being an archaeologist. But it's like, it's low stakes of like, a girl wants to join the metal detector club and he doesn't mention her to his girlfriend, and she becomes instantly suspicious of why she didn't, you know, get mentioned. And the answer is probably complicated and probably does involve not wanting to bring it up. But, you know, again, the stakes are kind of like Lance, played by Toby Jones. He's got an ex-wife with an awful new boyfriend, and yet he keeps visiting her. And the stakes are just like, why is he doing that? And like, and that's it. I mean, the show is just full of interesting small town characters. And Tim Goodman hooked me onto it. So shout out to Tim. It's great. So check it. I love that it's more widely available now, and that it's on fast channels as well. If you don't have Acorn, you can find it elsewhere. Detectorists. It's great. Mackenzie Crook. He's not just, what was his name in the British Office? He's the Dwight of the British Office, but I don't remember his name now. Anyway. And then he was in all those pirate movies. Anyway, it's not like that. It's great. All right. I think that brings us to the end. We did do some letters, downstreamfeedback.com. I love hearing from you, and we will try to answer your questions on the show. I love to hear from others. It's great to hear from all of you. Consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. This was a full-sized episode for everyone, but the only way to hear the complete version of our next episode and ad-free versions of everything is to subscribe. Go to downstream.plus to become a subscriber and support the show. Our sponsor this week was Memberful. And, Memberful is what powers Downstream Plus and lets you listeners keep the show going by supporting us. We appreciate that.
And good targeting, because I had not heard of Memberful, and I run a subscription business. So I actually went and checked it out when I saw it on the show notes.
I've got like four different things running through Memberful now. It's a huge part of my income. And thank you to all of you who are members. Will, where can people find you and your stuff?
You can find me at undertheknife.substack.com. Maybe I can move from there and do a Memberful. But for right now, I am running a sale. If you want to subscribe to Under the Knife, if you're into that sort of thing, if you're still willing to listen to me nerd out about injuries, sale right now, $49 for the year.
Yeah, if you're a baseball fan, especially if you're a fantasy player, do it. That's my endorsement. Do it. Will knows his stuff. All the way from the back in the days. We didn't even mention, like, my favorite name drop for you is like, oh yeah, he's one of the Baseball Prospectus people, like, from back in the day. Yeah, so Under the Knife, people should check it out. You can find me at sixcolors.com, many other podcasts here at Relay, including Upgrade, and over at theincomparable.com, where I host The Incomparable Mothership. And that brings us to the end. Thank you all for listening, Will. Always a pleasure.
Same.
I want to say go Eagles, but, you know, whatever. I don't care.